This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. We're 8 days away from the governor's election, and we'd like to hear from you. We've got two distinguished guests on the right and the left, Dane Sherman on the left and Troy Hebert on the right, and they're here to talk about what's going on in Louisiana and national politics. President Trump has inserted himself in this race. He was in Monroe two nights ago. He'll be in Bossier City next week. And we'll see if he moves the needle for Eddie Lee Risponi, who's trying to unseat John Bel Edwards as governor of Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. And Troy Hebert, former state lawmaker, House and Senate, and Dane Sherman, who is a professor at Southeastern Louisiana University, but is speaking as Dane Sherman's citizen who leans left on the political spectrum. And we'll start with Professor Sherman. As we look to November 16th, how does it look as far as the governor of Louisiana getting a second term or being unseated by the upstart newcomer, 70-year-old Eddie Lee Risponi? Dane Sherman, what do you think?
It's leaning toward Edwards. And there were times when it was real. I mean, it's close. It's going to be, look, it could be 1,000 votes difference. It could be 10,000 votes, but I believe it's leaning toward Edwards. And I think we're starting to see such massive Democratic turnout, particularly with African-American voters, that I think it's going to lean toward Edwards. I'd bet a sack of crawfish, boil crawfish on it, but that would be about it.
All right, Troy Hebert, how do you see it? You've seen a few elections. This one looks like it's going to be perhaps a photo finish, but Dane Sherman, perhaps speaking as much with his heart as his head, he thinks John Bel Edwards is headed for a second term. How do you see it?
Well, first, good morning, Jim and Dane, and to your listeners. I'm going to agree with Dane on that. I think it's a nail-biter. I think this is what they call a turnout election. I think it just depends on who gets their voters out. It looks like the state is pretty much evenly split when you look at the polls on who they want to vote for. The question is are they going to go and vote? You know, the Donald, as you said, flew in, and I can tell you this, either one or two things are going to happen. Is Risponi's going to win and Trump's going to take credit, or number two is that Risponi's going to lose and Trump's going to say it would have been worse if I didn't come. So we know mm-hmm. Trump's going to get out on top one way or the other on this deal.
Well, the president will be in Tuscaloosa, Alabama tomorrow with LSU in Alabama. And, of course, two states that have been very kind to him, along with the nine others in the Southeastern Conference, amassing 150 electoral votes. And I would imagine a man who never misses a photo op, Troy Hebert, Senator John Neely Kennedy, might find a way to get to Tuscaloosa, even though he is a graduate of Vanderbilt.
You can count on that. You can put a sack of crawfish on that.
Dane Sherman, John Kennedy is a ubiquitous man. I can't turn on my television without seeing the man. I often hear him on the radio, and I see him quoted. He's going to be at the press club Monday at his request, the Baton Rouge Press Club, and I would suspect he'll be bashing Nancy Pelosi, extolling the virtues of the man he has a man crush on, Donald John Trump, and probably making the case that Louisiana's headed for hell in a handbag if John Bel Edwards is reelected. What do you think about the senator, the junior senator, being such a headline grabber?
Well, Jim, I said I'd bet a sack of boiled crawfish that John Bel Edwards is going to win, but I'd bet a crawfish boat, a skiff with a good motor on it, that John Kennedy is going to be close to a television camera, and that's a fact. He has this ability to get in front of a camera. I've never seen anything like it. It must be some kind of sixth sense. And it is absolutely, as you said on your show, dangerous to be between him and a television camera anytime the light goes on.
And I remember when he beat Foster Campbell on election night, he gave a long-winded acceptance speech, and he talked about being, quote, average looking. Well, maybe he's the average guy, and like most members of his generation, John Neely Kennedy, born in 1951, found a way to sidestep Vietnam. And he spent a lot of time on great college campuses. He was in Charlottesville, Virginia. He was in Nashville, Tennessee. He was at Oxford, but he even briefly at Harvard. But he was not anywhere to be found in Southeast Asia. And he talks tough. In my neighborhood, if a guy talked like this, he better damn well be able to bench press his weight. I don't think Senator Kennedy can, but here he is the other night slamming the Speaker of the House.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi is trying to impeach him. I don't mean any disrespect, but it must suck to be that dumb.
All right. Senator Kennedy revved up. Troy Hebert, Nancy Pelosi's a pretty good punching bag in Monroe, Louisiana, when you were at a Trump rally, I would think.
Well, first of all, let me tell you about Senator Kennedy. I think he's the most countrified city boy I've ever seen. He certainly has a lot of really good country sayings, which I really enjoy listening to him. But, you know, he is a city guy. He dresses like a city guy. I think he drives a Mercedes-Benz, and he went to Harvard. But he has found a way to relate to the regular working people with the sayings that he has attracts the press. And I think that's why you see him on TV all the time, because he's the king of one-liners.
It must suck to be that dumb. He's used that a few times talking about a few people, but Nancy Pelosi is not a stupid individual. She's 79 years old. She is his elder and has a good record of public service. And at one time, Senator Kennedy was in accord with that record, applauding her for many years until he had this epiphany in his 50s and became a hard rock conservative. Dane Sherman, it appears, as Roy Fletcher, former mentor to John Kennedy, once said, Senator Kennedy learned how to read a poll.
Yes, he did. He learned how to read a poll. He understood that it would be a whole heck of a lot easier to be a senator or be a governor in Louisiana if you had an R behind your name, and that's the direction he went. And I believe if he says his prayers, and I assume he does, that he's kind of praying that John Bel Edwards will win so that in 4 years he'll be able to come and run for governor, and everybody knows he wants it so bad. He'd like to have it worse than anything in the world, and I bet you secretly he's hoping and praying that John Bel Edwards gets 4 more years.
Well, Garrett Graves may have the same feelings, as does Billy Nungesser and Mike Strain and Jeff Landry, all these people who are looking at the next race if John Bel Edwards wins, but they could be blocked by the one Drew Brees, who is at least testing the political waters, not publicly at the moment, but is interested in being president of the United States at some point, and probably would like to make a case that he could be Louisiana's governor. And my guess, Dane, is that he would be a very formidable candidate, even against the likes of Senator Kennedy.
Yes, he would. I think Senator Kennedy wouldn't run if he knew that Drew Brees. I'm not sure Kennedy would run against Drew Brees if Drew Brees ran as a Democrat. If they win this next Super Bowl, which I think they're headed for, he's already got the Midas touch, Drew Brees does, and I don't think Kennedy or Nungesser or anybody will get in the bullpen with Drew Brees.
Now, Troy Hebert, who knows these people pretty well, Senator Kennedy will be 68 years old on, I think, the 25th of this month. I'll get the date right. It's later this month. He'll turn 68, so he'll be 72 next time around for governor. Eddie Rasponi's 70, so if he's running for re-election, he would be 74 years old next time around. But my guess is that Kennedy will run for re-election to the Senate in 2022, and then in 2024, I think we're going to see John Neely Kennedy running for president of the United States of America. What do you think about the prospect of the second coming of Senator John Kennedy becoming president? November 21st, by the way, is his birthday. So,
well, he certainly has the name to run for president, as we know. He just needs to change his middle initial. But let me say this. Let's break this down for a minute. We all have to give it to Eddie Rasponi for having the balls and the money to run for governor, because we know that not only John Kennedy but several other heavy hitters had their eye on beating John Bell. And if you recall that Kennedy held out, which is why the field got started so late, because Kennedy held out on deciding whether he was going to run or not. And back when the polls a year ago showed that Edwards couldn't be beat. And the reason I say that the polls showed that, because y'all right, Kennedy can read a poll, and some very expensive pollster told him that you can't beat Edwards right now, which is why he decided not to run. Think about it. It was a free shot for him. Well, fast forward, Eddie Rasponi says, you know what, I don't care what the polls say. I've got the money, and I'm going to go ahead and run. And now it looks like they got Edwards on the mat, and he may beat him. And I know that they're kicking themselves at night saying, golly, you know what? My daddy always told me, you only regret the things that you don't do. And I promise you, if Rasponi wins, there's going to be a whole lot of regrets with a whole lot of powerful Republicans.
And Dane Sherman, you and Troy Hebert may disagree on some things, but I think he's spot on in that analysis.
Yeah, he is. Because what it'll mean is that Eddie's going to have 8 years, and in 8 years, likely, John Kennedy's going to be too old. He's going to be too worn out. I mean, he doesn't look like he's got near the stamina that Nancy Pelosi does, and she might be able to bench press her weight. Jim, I'm telling
you,
that's very possible.
You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg could do it into her early 80s, and I would think that Senator Kennedy, with that great gym that he talks about, he uses, he should be able to keep up with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But my guess is that the senator can not only not bench press his weight, but cannot bench press half his weight. We'll be back with Dane Sherman and Troy Hebert after this quick timeout. This is Jim Eakster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle and Kirby Ferries are producing, and our special guests are former state lawmaker Troy Hebert and Professor Dane Sherman. They're talking about the Louisiana political scene and national, of course. National politics has been inserted in our gubernatorial election. 877-217-5757 is your number. Before we go to the first call, Troy Hebert, a listener, asks about the implications of the win the other night by a Democrat in the red state of Kentucky. Does that have any relevance to what's going on in Louisiana? Do you think?
Well, Jim.
Go ahead.
Well, let me just say this. You know, they always, the media loves to blame Trump when people lose, and they don't want to give him any credit when they win. The problem with Trump is, I don't think Trump has the coattails that people think he has in other parts of the country. Now, in the Deep South, he might have some. All I'm trying to say is that Trump is Trump, and you find that there are plenty of races where that same electorate would vote for Trump in a heartbeat, but they may not vote for the candidate that he's for. And so he can get himself elected. I'm just not sure he's as strong as getting other people elected as people give him credit for, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Another listener asks if Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, who's now decided to run for president as a Democrat, former Republican, by the way, if he's taking a page out of Eddie Rasponi's playbook. He's got gobs of money, and in his case, he has like $50 billion or more. And Eddie Rasponi has $40 million, according to reports, and he's already spent $12.5 million of that $40 million. At least he's putting his money where his mouth is. And Michael Bloomberg, Dane Sherman, might very well be a formidable contender for the Democratic nomination.
He will be a formidable contender. I'm not for him. I think his day is past, and I think he needs to leave that race alone. I don't know why he needs to meddle in the race. I mean, I don't think he has the bona fides to be a Democrat. He may be able to buy the nomination, knock enough people out. But, I'm about tired of billionaires running the country. I just don't think it's a great idea, and I wish he'd pick up another hobby.
Michael Bloomberg, who, when he was mayor of New York, had a listed telephone number, and the New York Times tested him, and he actually answered his phone. So not many billionaire mayors would do something like that. And he is 77 years old. My goodness, he'll be 78 on Valentine's Day. Net worth $51.5 billion. 877-217-5757 for Dane and Troy. Let's go to David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. How could Eddie Rasponi accuse Governor Edwards of keeping wages down in Louisiana when he opposes raising the minimum wage and Governor Edwards supports raising the minimum wage and Rasponi's support of Trump is insane? Louisiana has more to lose than any other state in the nation when it comes to climate change, coastal erosion, and the seafood industry is a major source of income in Louisiana, and the coast is eroding. And Rasponi won't even accept, evidently, climate change if he supports Trump. And
all right. Well, those issues have been largely ignored, also by John Bel Edwards, by the way. But minimum wage is one that most polls show. David is accurate. Most polls in Louisiana show most of the people in Louisiana are in favor of raising the minimum wage, but the legislature won't do it, and Eddie Rasponi is in accord with the Republican-controlled legislature. Why isn't this a bigger issue, Troy Hebert, and should it be an issue?
Well, first of all, Jim, you know, look, I've always been a champion of the little man, and certainly minimum wage is a very important issue when it comes to the way it sounds. The problem is, I'm also a business guy. I mean, we all know there's just not that many people that actually make minimum wage. I mean, the market dictates. I bet you even at McDonald's, people flipping burgers make more than minimum wage. And the market dictates that. I think it gives the little guys a false sense of hope that if they raise the minimum wage, they're going to get a raise or whatever. There's actually been studies show that people might actually lose their jobs if you raise the minimum wage. All I'm trying to say is the market, that is a market thing. When people get paid and when businesses can afford to pay people to hire them, is a free market. And I can assure you, once again, you go try to find anybody that will work for minimum wage. You're not going to do that.
All right. Now, Dane Sherman, why isn't the governor speaking more about this? Troy makes an eloquent case against it, but as I said, most polls show that the overwhelming majority of Louisiana residents, voters, are in favor of an increase in the minimum wage.
I just think it's not going to pass the Louisiana legislature, and I don't think it's the highest priority at this point. But, you know, one issue that the Louisiana economy is doing really well. I am just shocked at the progress that John Bel Edwards and working with the Republican legislature has made during the four years he's had. But one thing people aren't talking about, and you know, the White House sends out a memo saying that the economy in Louisiana is doing great, you need to thank Trump, and then he bashes him in Monroe, bashes the governor. Crude, I checked crude this morning, the NYMEX was $56.27. We're way off what we need in that area. So the people that are probably hurting the most in Louisiana are tied to oil. But that's an international market. We talk about free market. The oil price is an international price.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on with Troy Hebert and Dane Sherman.
Yeah, the economy in Louisiana is doing good and bad. But, you know, it is Trump. It is the Republicans. It is their policy of easing the regulation on big energy and industry that has really helped our economy. But what is not helping our economy is John Bel, his dependency, Medicaid expansion, the unions, the poor public education system we have. John Bel is holding us back. So if we can unhitch that trailer, we can move a lot faster, build wealth quicker, and that's what Trump is supporting. I didn't think the advocate was very fair. I mean, yeah, there's certain things we're doing to promote the economy, but it doesn't help when you got an anchor on you, you know?
All right. Now, Patrick does not mention, neither does the president, that we have a $1 trillion deficit. And as Lloyd Benson once said, give me $1 trillion in hot checks. In his case, he said $1 billion. But let's say $1 trillion in hot checks, and I can give you the illusion of prosperity. Dane, if each state divided $1 trillion, that would be $20 billion a year for each state to spend in deficit spending. I think any governor of Louisiana could do pretty well with $20 billion to throw around like the president does.
You better believe it. And we could, one thing for sure, we could many times over have the best pre-K programs in the world. There's much we could do with that kind of money, and it's a shame we don't have it. It is eerily quiet from the Republican side when you talk about debt and deficit under Trump, because it's been just so expansive. Nothing like Obama. Obama brought it way down.
All right. The economy in Louisiana is, according to the governor, good. According to his challenger, bad. Where are we, Troy Hebert? What is reality?
Well, first of all, a quick civics lesson to the professor here is that, you know, the Congress and the state legislature has what they call the power of the purse. So I think it's wrong to either blame Edwards or blame Trump or Obama or any lead person in the executive branch, because it's the legislative branch that spends the money. And so whatever deficit spending we have, you got to blame whoever's in charge at the time.
Wait a minute, but the president presented a budget that was accepted by Congress, overwhelmingly voted for by members of his own party. And I will say this, John Kennedy voted against that. He voted against the president's budget bill. But, of course, the other night he said we have the greatest economy in the history of the world. Now, we've got a $1 trillion deficit, a $23 trillion debt. What is the senator smoking?
Well, but again, the president and the governor presents a budget, but the legislature, I sat on Appropriations Committee, you can go in, the legislature can amend it,
they
tweak
can,
it, or fix
but,
it, or whatever.
But you know they often don't.
Well, they don't, but so that's my point, is when you blame Edwards for a lot of spending, well, the legislature in Louisiana is controlled by Republicans. When you blame Republicans in the legislature in Washington, the House is controlled by Democrats.
Now,
so
not
yeah,
just,
now,
just
but,
now, like in a, 10 months.
Well, okay, but gentlemen, it was exactly what I always tell you, which is why I'm an independent and not a Republican. I'm a conservative, and there's a whole bunch of Republicans out there who have the name of a Republican, but they're not conservative because they.
All right, we do have to take a pause, but we'll return and hear more from the revved up Troy Hebert and his adversary, Dane Sherman. Now the news.
Louisiana Radio Network News, I'm Kevin Barnhart. Seven Republicans are in runoffs for seats that could result in the House having a GOP supermajority. Matt Doyle has the story.
The October elections were an absolute unmitigated disaster for the Democrats in the legislature.
Political analyst Bernie Pinsonat says the Senate is already a supermajority and it's looking favorable that the GOP could take a similar hold of the House by hitting the 70-seat mark. Pinsonat says that could limit Governor Edwards' ability to pass Democratic-leaning legislation.
He'll be facing a legislature that is basically two-thirds Republicans, and unless he's pushing an agenda in the Republicans' favor, how much will he get done?
I'm Matt Doyle.
State police responded to a single-vehicle crash yesterday that killed a woman from Elmer who was not wearing a seatbelt. A Mazda was eastbound on LA Highway 488 when the driver lost control. The only adult passenger, identified as 25-year-old Brooke DeVille, was pronounced dead. The driver and a toddler who was properly restrained in a child safety seat survived and sustained only minor injuries. Louisiana Radio Network.
Dr. Harris, your eye appointment is here.
Send him in.
Doc, you gotta help me.
What's the problem?
It's my eyes. I think I have triple vision.
Triple vision, you say?
Triple vision.
Triple vision?
Yes, that's right.
Well, let's check. Read this chart for me, please.
333-LLL-444. What is it, Doc?
I don't know how to tell you this, but this is a clear case of triple tripler.
Triple tripler?
Yes, triple tripler. The new $1 instant ticket from the lottery.
Triple your fun and play triple tripler from the lottery. Win up to $3,000. Visit any lottery retailer and pick up triple tripler today for your chance to win.
Your next appointment is here.
Doc, I think I've got triple vision.
Triple vision?
Yes, triple vision.
Triple vision?
What are you doing?
Sorry.
Triple, triple, triple your fun with Triple Tripler today. Win up to $3,000. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
The LSU Center for Energy Studies is projecting employment in the oil and gas sectors will remain flat even as the industry as a whole sees expansion in the coming years. The Gulf of Mexico is expected to take on a larger share of the U.S. oil production, rising from 66% to 70% over the next decade, per The Advocate. But these numbers could be upended by factors outside of the state's control. Study co-author LSU professor Greg Upton says because so much of Louisiana's energy sector is export-based.
If we have increased trade frictions over the next few years, that could be a really, really big detriment to the Louisiana economy and a really big detriment to the refining, chemical manufacturing, and energy export business.
Department of Children and Family Services is celebrating having found 893 foster care children permanent homes over the last year. The number is the second highest on record, and records have been set for adoption in the past 3 years. DCFS Secretary Markina Garner-Walters credits the state's 2016 transformation of its approach to foster care and adoption for the high numbers.
We have made it a focus, and it paid off.
LRN.
This is Jim Eakster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. If you'd like to get in under the finish line with Dane Sherman and Troy Hebert, 877-217-5757 is your number. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Would Louisiana and the U.S. be better off with politicians willing to compromise to get things done rather than a bunch of extremist cornpone bloviating from the likes of John Kennedy?
All right. Troy, you want to start with that one?
Well, I totally agree with the call. I mean, that's the problem we have in today's environment is nobody is for anything. They just against everything. And the problem is that the American people are stuck somewhere in the middle. And so you take, like, Louisiana, for example. I mean, we don't really care if you're Republican or Democrat. I mean, look, here we are. We have a Democratic governor in a Republican state. We want somebody that can get things done and can work with other people. We had that in the past, but today it's nowhere to be found.
And how do you see it, Dane Sherman?
Look, I'm going to give a shout-out for divided government. And people are going to think that that's really odd coming from me. And what I mean by that is, as a result of John Bel Edwards having a Republican legislature on both sides of the aisle, of the House, excuse me, of the Capitol, they produced some of the best legislation. He signed some of the best legislation, for example, criminal justice reform, that we've ever had. Give divided government a chance. That's why I think if we had both chambers of the U.S. Government in the hands of the Democrats, I might vote for a Republican, vice versa.
All right. A story that a listener asked us to address is front page in some corners, including the New York Times. A New York judge has ordered President Trump to pay $2 million in damages to nonprofit groups on after the president admitted misusing money raised by the Donald J. Trump Foundation to promote his presidential bid, pay off business debts, and pursue a portrait of himself for one of his hotels. The damage award brought an end to a protracted legal battle over the foundation, whose giving patterns and management became a flashpoint during Mr. Trump's run for office. Mr. Trump, of course, had been under investigation by the New York Attorney General. He filed suit, the Attorney General did last year, accusing the president and his family of using the foundation as an extension of his business and his presidential campaign. The settlement, which was finalized last month and announced yesterday, included a detailed admission of misconduct that is rare for the president, who has long employed a scorched earth approach toward fighting lawsuits. Among Mr. Trump's admissions, the charity gave his campaign complete control over dispersing the $2.8 million the foundation raised at a fundraiser for veterans in Iowa in January of 16, only days before the state's presidential nominating caucuses. The fundraiser, he acknowledged, was in fact a campaign event. So, Dane Sherman, the president, has admitted that he took advantage of veterans and that basically this was a sham. Why isn't he being prosecuted? I hear he can't be prosecuted while he's president, but it would seem that if some citizen engaged in this kind of conduct, he or she would be in federal court.
Well, it's because he's president, as you said, Jim, and he, for some reason, I don't know if it's because he skipped Vietnam, Trump has this really weird thing where he constantly attacks veterans. We see it even with Eddie Rasponi, who skipped Vietnam, attacking John Bel Edwards because, for some reason, after he spent 8 years in the military and went to West Point, he decided he wanted to feed his family back in a meet. And went to LSU Law School. I don't really understand it. I don't think it's good for the country. I'm not saying criticism of the military is off limits, but to attack veterans or to take advantage of them, that's pretty low.
Troy Hebert, what do you think?
Jim?
Yes, sir. Are you speechless?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. The phone just beeped in. Let me just say this. All of these sideshow lawsuits by liberals are basically like a gnat on an elephant's butt. What really gets me is that I'll never forget the debate when they asked Trump, would he acknowledge and concede if Hillary won and honor that? And when he kind of paused a little bit, everybody freaked out about it and said, oh, you see how he's not being fair. That's exactly what the liberals are doing. He won the election fair and square. It's over with. He's president. But yet they cannot concede, they cannot give it, you know, up that they lost. And it's really aggravating. I think the American people want something done about roads and taxes and bridges.
Wait a minute. In this case, the president is admitting wrongdoing, including, this is his admission, that his charity gave his campaign control over dispersing $2.8 million that was raised for veterans.
Now, there's no fake news here. This is the president admitting that he took $2.8 million for veterans and spent it on his campaign.
Okay. Let's say he acknowledged that. That's the case. The point is, I'm sure, look, he's done way more for veterans since he's been president than this $2.8 million snafu would ever happen. I don't know the details about it, Jim. All I'm trying to tell you is he's the president of the United States. He's our president. We ought to support him to get things done that the American people want to get done. And all these little sideshows distract him from being a good president. And they just need to acknowledge that he is president. Let's work with him. And, hey, after the next president, there's a new one, we'll work with them.
All right. The president has a way of spreading money around to unusual sources. He also paid $130,000 to Stormy Daniels for her silence, a porn star from Baton Rouge with whom he had an extramarital affair. Jim and Walker, you're on the air with Dane Sherman and Troy Hebert. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. So the president violated the law, and he violated the Constitution. These are not things that we just let the president do and then let him go about his business, because his business has been violating the law. And by the way, it's ASKED, A-S-K-E-D.
All right, Jim. I think we have an intelligent man here in Troy Hebert, and another one, of course, with the degrees to show for it in Dr. Dane Sherman. And I'm glad that we always have intelligent people on this show, because I wouldn't want to hear from Senator Kennedy when he gets revved up about people he thinks who are not as intelligent as he is.
I don't mean any disrespect, but it must suck to be that dumb.
All right. I thought we had it looped, but apparently not. And Dane Sherman, your thoughts about John Neely Kennedy, will this be something that will hound him, or will this go away? Will it not even matter in a few days?
Jim, being kind of crazy and talking well below his education level is John Kennedy's brand. I don't see how it hurts him at all. I mean, that's what he does. He's, as Troy said, he's a city boy who talks like a country boy, and he does not elevate the level of correspondence. I'll just leave it at that.
And he talks tough, but he is not a physically imposing man, as you noted, and I suspect you are correct, Dane, that on a percentage basis, Nancy Pelosi could lift more of her weight than John Kennedy can his. What do you think about these guys in politics who strut around like tough guys and trash talk, including the president, Troy Hebert? And look at the president. He is morbidly obese, and he acts like he can knock people on their butt. He's not a very imposing man. And some would say he's challenged in other ways.
Well, let me say this. This is nothing new. I mean, let's go back to Huey Long in Louisiana. I mean, the guy had a silver tongue. And people, the public, the voters, love people who say things that they say in the morning at the coffee shop. Where Donald Trump and Kennedy and others are gaining their power is the silent majority out there who's been forgotten by both parties, Democrats and Republicans, mostly career politicians. They love when a person gets up there and maybe says a curse word every now and then, but it's plain spoken. When Trump misspells something on Twitter, I really think he does it on purpose, because it goes off the charts. People are like, you know what? He's just like me. He can't spell either. He's my kind of man. That's what the rich, powerful political elite are missing in this whole show of politics today.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's funny that you say that Neely Kennedy, or whatever his name is not imposing, that President Trump and all his girth is a fat man. But who is the one that is saying that he wants to take President Trump behind the dumpster and behind the gym and beat him up? Biden couldn't beat a couple of eggs with a blender.
Well, you and I agree on Joe Biden. He also was a draft dodger, too, and shame on him and President Trump and John Neely Kennedy. And let's go to Rob in Slidell. Good morning, Rob. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. I heard you talking about bench pressing your own weight.
Yes.
I can't do that, but I'd like to challenge you in a 5K.
Well, I think you could whip me in a 5K. I broke a lot of bones, but I tell you what, we could compare the two.
Okay.
We'll see on a percentage basis.
I'll meet you out by the monkey bars after school.
Okay, I like that. I like that,
okay,
Rob. I like that. We need more people like Rob and Slidell, Dane Sherman.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm afraid, Jim, we've degenerated into wishing each other to meet after school. So
no, I really think that often fiscal discipline starts with physical discipline. And you look at a guy like Obama, he reduced the deficit and he was in good shape. And you look at a guy like Trump, and when he talks about making America great again, I think maybe he's talking about making America immense again, as in gargantuan, big budgets, big people. He's into big things.
I think I want to agree with Troy about one thing, and that is, at least in Louisiana and America as well, we do like our politicians to be entertaining. And if anything, President Obama, who was a very competent man, was not highly entertaining, very effective. John Bel Edwards has not been highly entertaining, but very effective.
Finally, Troy Hebert, who wins a week from Saturday? Dane says John Bel Edwards. Who do you say?
I say Rusponi by 2 or 3 points.
Thank you, men. Always a pleasure to talk with both of you. And we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're joined in studio by Doug Gay. He is the founder and owner of the Baton Rouge Music Studio and singer-songwriter David St. Romain. And they're here to talk about Veteran Songs of Survivors workshops, now being rebranded as the Veteran Songwriting Collective. That's Veteran Songwriting Collective. And they are here to talk about their support for veterans. And also, Louisiana has received a federal grant from the National Institute for Americans and the Arts and Health Summit, one of only three states, the others being South Dakota and New Jersey, for this endeavor. And good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, Doug, how did you get involved?
So we actually, at my studio, we're an education-based business, and we primarily work with young musicians who are learning how to play guitar, bass, drums, things like that. As we kind of mastered what we think that should be, we get restless and we want to create new programs for, you know, different people from different walks of life. We ended up creating a program through a partner school in Boston called the Real School of Music, and that program is called AMAP. It's Adaptive Music Arts Program. So from there, we met with Danny through the Louisiana Divisions of the Arts, Danny Bellinger, who told us first and foremost that the Lieutenant Governor, Nungesser, is very much in support of veterans and programs for veterans from all ages, all walks of life. Is there any way we could create a songwriting workshop for these men and women? And we said, absolutely, we can do that. So that's how we kind of came about with the idea of the workshop. Then we toiled around and developed the curriculum and, you know, waited on funding, and 2 years later we started our pilot program.
Well, Louisiana has over 300,000 veterans residing in our state. Many struggle with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, other service-related diagnoses. As you mentioned, the Lieutenant Governor has sought healing arts programs to help them, and Louisiana, a number we don't often hear, also has the highest number of veteran suicides for ages 18 to 34. Higher than the national average by a fairly big margin, 5% higher than the national average. So these are people who served our country. Many of them, of course, were in harm's way in the many wars we've had recently. And some of them, of course, go back all the way to World War II in Korea. But David St. Romain, this is a passion of yours as well.
Yes, sir. Doug came to me, Doug and Sarah Burke, our other partner in this, came to me and asked me to join them from the songwriting perspective, also from being a veteran myself. And so I've always had a heart to serve, give back to my fellow battle buddies. And obviously music is a universal love language, and there's so much power in healing and passion and just even positive love in it. So
you're a veteran. What's your experience in the military?
I was in the Louisiana Army National Guard.
All right. And many National Guardsmen through the years have been called to service.
That's right. I did not serve a hardship tour. I think that's part of my reasoning, or maybe just part of the dialogue. But I wanted to give back. You know, a lot of include my brother who served three tours overseas. So,
three tours in which war?
He was in Desert Shield, which turned into Desert Storm, mm-hmm. and then he was in Iraq as a company commander, mm-hmm. and he was then as a battalion commander in out of Kuwait with two units, one in Jordan and one in Afghanistan.
Well, David St. Romain is an accomplished singer and songwriter, and you not only have a passion that you're talking about, but you have a passion that you're singing about. You've got a guitar with you, so, I mean, you come into the studio with a guitar, you got to get to work.
Hey, I don't mind
Are
at
you
all.
You ready?
I don't mind at all. Yeah, okay. nothing like a 950 performance. Let's
so,
do it.
Real quickly, David's about to perform a song called The Fall of Saigon, which was the product of our Shreveport workshop. One of our participants got real personal with us about his experiences. It was a great day, and this is what came out of it with the team and Gary putting the words and songs together.
Yeah. Spring of 75 in Nam, we were losing our friends in Saigon. From the north, shells were falling in the streets. People were dying. I was watching it from a distance. Annihilation of an existence. There's no words to explain all the guilt, all the shame. It's hard to imagine what they went through, 'cause what you've been told really ain't the truth. You can't say that you understand till you see the face of a dying man. Guess you had to be there. Guess you had to be there. Guess you had to be there like me. Many years have passed me by. I still feel like I'm living a lie. When there's nobody to tell how I'm trapped inside this hell. Tried to mask it with a bottle. Hit the bottom at full throttle. But I'm reaching for the light at the end of the night. It's hard to imagine what they went through, 'cause what you've been told really ain't the truth. You can't say that you understand till you see the face of a dying man. Guess you had to be there. Guess you had to be there. Guess you had to be there like me. I know the healing has begun every time these words are sung, but the memory of that time stands with a stillness in my mind. Guess you had to be there.
Well done. The Fall of Saigon from David St. Romain, and four workshops have occurred around the state. Two more in the planning stages, free and open to all veterans. Four-day-long workshops held around the state, held by professional educators, songwriters, and touring musicians. This is part of the Veterans Songwriting Collective, and David St. Romain, you can tell, is a man with great passion and talent. And for more information, you can go to brmusicstudios.com, brmusicstudios.com, or call 225-342-8129, 225-342-8129. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time and your
Thank
service
you, Jim. Appreciate you.
To those who deserve plaudits any day of the year, not just Veterans Day. So tomorrow's a big day in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Number one, LSU. Number two, Alabama. Alabama's a six-point favorite. They've beaten LSU eight straight times. Nick Saban's 14-3 in this series. Excuse me. He's 14-4. He's lost three times at Alabama, once when he was at LSU, but he's had great success no matter which side of the sideline he was on. And tomorrow, Coach O tries to win for the first time in four tries, and many believe it is his turn. And if Joe Burrow has a good day and the Tigers win, Joe Burrow will likely be LSU's first Heisman Trophy winner since 1959, when Billy Cannon won the honor. It was 60 years ago last week that Billy Cannon, the anniversary of the run, the 60th anniversary occurred, the 89-yard punt return that beat Ole Miss that gave Cannon the Heisman. And perhaps the most famous play in New Orleans Saints history occurred 49 years ago today, when Tom Dempsey, the club-footed kicker, went out on the field to try a then-record NFL yardage field goal mark. And here's how it sounded from the remarkable Al Wester on November 8th, 1970, in Old Tulane Stadium.
Will it try to kick the longest field goal in National League history? They're sending him on with 2 seconds left. Scarpetti will hold. Here's a snap. The ball is down. Dempsey kicks. It's on the way. It is.
That was 63 yards, November 8, 1970. The Saints were not very good that year. They went 2-11-1, 14-game seasons. But that remains as the most vivid play in the history of the New Orleans Saints. It was at Tulane Stadium, which actually seated more people than does the Louisiana Superdome. The biggest crowd ever for a game at Tulane Stadium was LSU and Tulane in 1973. More than 86,000 people showed up that night as Tulane broke a 25-year losing skid against LSU and won 14-0. Tomorrow, LSU tries to break an 8-game losing skid to Alabama, and we'll be talking about it Monday. Among other things, Gene Mills, the head of the Family Forum, will also be with us, and it is election week. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until Monday, for Matt Doyle and Kirby Ferries, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.